Welcome to Talking Cybersecurity, a weekly podcast listened to by people in over 40 countries around the world. My name is Richard Herron. This podcast involves people talking cybersecurity. Expect to hear about data breaches, different approaches to cybersecurity, and reports on cybersecurity events that I or my guests attend. Opinions expressed by myself or my guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of my organisation or the organisation my guests are associated with. If you want to continue the conversation, feel free to join the LinkedIn group Talking Cybersecurity. Thanks to Pixabay for allowing me to use their music. Hi everyone and welcome back to Talking Cybersecurity. Today is Monday, January 29, 2024. This is episode 57. Having clocked up well over 50 episodes, I thought it was a good time to summarise the episodes in blocks of 10. So this is the first block of 10, covering episodes 1 through to 10. It was actually good for me to do this. I'd forgotten a few items I'd discussed, and it may be helpful to some of you. At some stage, I'll put up a table in the LinkedIn group, Talking Cybersecurity, that lets the reader know what each episode is about. The podcast itself was set up because I'd always wanted to try podcasting and because I wanted to help the next generation of security personnel. If you were an early adopter, you would have known that we called ourselves the Australian CISO for almost 50 episodes. It was after about episode 40 or so that I realised how limiting the podcast name was. I'd limited my audience by using the word Australian, and there were not a lot of people who knew what the acronym CISO stood for. Additionally, it wasn't overly descriptive of the podcast. We were always talking cybersecurity, so it made sense that we called the podcast Talking Cybersecurity. Now let's look at episodes 1 through to 10. The very first episode aired on February 26, 2023. It was called the trailer episode, where I detailed what was to come in future episodes. We've kept most of our promises. We said we'd discuss security, and we've done that. We said we'd have guests. We've done that as well. We mentioned how people achieved their first CISO role, how people approach security strategies. We also mentioned that we'd talk about boards, board reporting, interviews, and lessons learnt. Well, I think we've done all of that. What we didn't do is keep each episode to 10 minutes, and that's something I said in episode 1. Most episodes, as most of you will know, will go for 20 minutes, give or take. We established an email account for you to send comments to. We've actually changed that email address to talkingcybersec@gmail.com. So please direct any comments, questions that you may have to that email address in the future, talkingcybersec@gmail.com. We said we were a zero budget production and not to expect perfection in the sound quality. Well, we lived up to that expectation. We have had some issues with sound, especially when I interviewed people in open areas. Lesson learnt there. Episode 2 was titled The Surprise Penetration Test, which was a great prequel to episode 3. In episode 2, we likened a surprise penetration test to a real cyber event, i.e. surprise penetration tests were beneficial because, just like a real attack, no one will be on heightened alert when the attack occurs. What a great way to test your detective and protective capabilities, as well as your subsequent response capabilities. One thing we did conclude was that if you do choose a surprise attack, you must get the approval of the board first, and we provided the format of the paper or the format of the conversation that you'd have with the board. You would either state or write a board paper asking their approval for the surprise penetration test. You would state the benefits, i.e. no one is tipped off, it'll be a great test of detective, protective and response capability, etc. You would plant the seed in their minds that the pen testers probably will get access to the environment, more than likely via a phishing email. And we recommended that you should reiterate that it is better that your organisation is alerted to the exposures now before the cyber criminals discover them later. One of the listeners told me that episode 2 inspired them to do a surprise red team, blue team test. Hooray. They followed our recommendation, hooray, and informed their board that the test would happen within the next 6 months without giving an exact date. which I think is good because the listener said that every time they met with the board asked them, have you done the test yet? What were the results? We can't wait to hear if they got in or not. For them, one interesting but not unexpected interaction occurred, and I've heard a similar occurrence in other organisations who have done such a test. Their infrastructure team was really annoyed that they were not informed about the test. So let me get this right. So you're going to tell the infrastructure team, or the infrastructure manager, whose staff monitor for such occurrences, that you're about to do a surprise pen test on a particular date? Right. Why would you tell anyone other than the board and the CEO? You just can't afford anyone who monitors the environment to know that there is a surprise scenario. We do not have the benefit of being warned by cyber criminals. This has to be as near to a real scenario as possible. If you want to test your security ecosystem, do not tell anyone other than those that I've previously mentioned. It's not a matter of trust. It's a matter of certainty. Episode 3 followed on from Episode 2. The episode covered a number of lessons learnt from the surprise pen test, and I've got to say, I hear similar findings from other penetration tests that occur in other organisations. Here's some of them. Implement multiple layers of defence for email security, including email security products, security awareness training, and phishing simulations. Block email domains registered in the last 100 days to prevent phishing emails if you have that capability. Configure email settings to alert users when an email is sent from an external source. Ensure users can only register one device as an MFA authenticator and do not disable MFA just for convenience. Secure passwords by using a password safe and regularly searching for and removing documents with passwords in them. Review the positioning of jump hosts in IT and OT environments. And there are a number of other recommendations we had in Episode 3. Episode 4 was all about a one-day 6 degrees media event I attended entitled Security, the Future of Tech, Innovation and Work. I really enjoyed the conference. There are a number of good points raised, and listen to Episode 4 as I won't be able to list all the insights here, but I'll try to extract some. One of the points I made in the episode was that being in security isn't just about writing security papers, looking at a screen, reporting to the board, going to countless meetings, or using security tools. I mentioned that a major component of our job is keeping our knowledge up to date, hearing what others are doing, and most of all, networking. That's why I tend to go to conferences, breakfast, lunches, etc. There are a lot of free get-togethers out there. So, some of the words of wisdom from the conference were data breaches. Third-party risk is undervalued. Basic example, contractors may not go through the same amount of security training that you do. Despite what the media and some CEOs say, most breaches are not sophisticated. I think we all know that. Why do organisations hold on to so much information on their customers? In most cases, if it's not required, get rid of it. If the data doesn't exist, the cyber criminals cannot steal it. Add partnerships to the people, process and technology adage. The human element could be letting us down with respect to cyber resiliency, with the well-known stat that 90 to 95% of ransomware occurs due to human error. Actually, considering the nature of ransomware, 100% of ransomware would be attributable to human error. Lift and enhance what you've already got. Stop chasing the latest shiny new toy. You need visibility over all assets. You can't protect what you don't know about. Automate the mundane. And last, Stephen Sheeler's 7 lessons for SOZOs are: understand your company's business model, understand the reporting lines, listen. What do people want from security? What are the KPIs your business is measuring, and how can you contribute to them? Align the culture with what you do. How are decisions made? Insert yourself into the decision-making process. How is cybersecurity viewed? A blocker, an SME, an enabler? Discover that and align yourself more to being an enabler. Less risk improves lives and enables the business. Never a true word was said. So that was episode 4 in a nutshell. Episode 5 contained 2 interviews with people who attended the conference that I covered in episode 4. I won't go into details, but It involved one very experienced security person, Nigel Hedges, and one very experienced IT person, Matt Doll, who had aspirations of being a CISO. Episode 6 was one of my updates, breaches, and about episodes. The main points were: security people do have a fascination about the specific details of data breaches. Why is that so? Well, we want to know because the board and our staff will want to know exactly what happened. In fact, many boards expect a one-pager every time there is a breach. We want to promote security awareness, not inhibit it. So we need to keep up to date and be able to answer the questions from our staff. We want to learn from the latest data breach, i.e. how did the attackers get into the environment? What methods did they use? How were they detected, etc.? And we need these details so our companies aren't susceptible to the same attack. We talked about how we do not, as a security community, like it when people name and shame others who have been through a cyber event. It's just too easy to take pot shots from afar. We don't know what security teams go through, what their budget is, what the interests from their boards are, etc. So we nicely say, lay off companies that have had a breach. I remember there was a lot of company bashing during the first part of 2023. Provide help, not hindrance. We also talked about a Qualys luncheon I attended. Key points from the speakers being, everyone is facing similar problems. Breaches, it's hard to keep up with all the patching of the vulnerabilities, etc. There are zillions of lines of code out there. With so much code being developed, it just has to contain vulnerabilities. We can't fix them all. What do you concentrate on? What do you have in your environment? This has to be the number one consideration. You just can't patch what you don't know in your environment. What's your current risk? What are the important assets? Are they all exploitable? Focus should be on the current risk. How do I fix it? You'll obviously need a plan of attack for that. Am I protected after I remove or mitigate the risk? Beware of the increase in inherent risks as more data is generated. The increasing nature of security complexity causes us problems. How technology is increasing and improving at a great rate, but it certainly does bring new risks along with it. And how we are all facing cost reduction measures. Episode 7 covered third-party security assessments and a PII data security standard. So the first part of this episode covered what I thought about third-party security assessments, and you'd really need to listen to the episode to do it justice. Basically, I stated that I know why companies send out third-party questionnaires. It's all about identifying risk and asking your vendors to mitigate any identified risk. But many security people I know find completing 50 plus questions from various vendors as an extreme expenditure of time. Time that they could have spent on improving controls. And it's interesting how demanding some third parties can be, i.e. we think you need to implement, say, a DLP system. When are you going to do that? Well, maybe your vendor is a small company. Maybe you just don't have the personnel to use, monitor, and report on such a tool. Maybe you already have good compensating controls. And then the real killer punch when it comes to third-party assessments is this. If your company is, say, ISO 27001 compliant, SOC 1, SOC 2, Type 2 compliant, shouldn't that be good enough? Why do I need to fill out a 50-question questionnaire if I've got all those 27001, SOC 1, SOC 2, etc.? Quite often you'll find the third party wanting all these answers aren't deploying world-class security practices themselves. The second part of episode 7 is where I proposed a PII DSS standard. Basically, replace the words credit card data in the PCI DSS standard with the words personally identifiable information, and voila, you would have a very strong PII data security standard that we could all strive for and hopefully adhere to. I think that would significantly raise the bar with respect to the protection of PII data and data breaches in Australia. Episode 8 was entitled Ring Ring, Why Don't You Give Me a Call? What does that mean? Well, I have a friend to thank for this episode. He'd regularly call me with the words, "Hey, this job at XYZ's popped up on Seek, what do you think?" My friend had not put a lot of thought into his future career, so I concluded that he needed some type of career plan, and I thought if he needed one, maybe some of the listeners to the podcast needed a career plan. So episode 8 was all about developing a career plan instead of just meandering from job to job. We discussed the GROW model, goals, reality, options, wrap-up as a framework, and mapping out a career path. And we emphasised the importance of self-assessment, identifying a skills gap, and taking proactive steps to develop the necessary skills and experience. We concluded by providing a checklist for evaluating job opportunities and making informed decisions. Some points that were raised in that episode were: it is crucial to have a clear career goal and map out a plan to achieve it. Sounds obvious, but not a lot of people have that. Assessing the current reality and identifying the skills and experience needed for the desired role is essential. Exploring different options for skill development, such as cross-training, shadowing, and external courses, can help bridge the gap between the current reality and what the job seeker desires. Collaboration and seeking feedback from mentors and colleagues are key to skill development and career advancement. And when evaluating job opportunities, consider the alignment with career goals, the organization's culture and future prospects, flexibility and compensation. Episode 9 was an interview I did with ex-work colleague Veronica Hall. We discussed the importance of collaboration and networking in the security industry, as well as the need to understand the business drivers and stakeholder needs when implementing security measures. Veronica shared her journey from engineering to risk and security, and emphasised the importance of being a forever learner in this ever-changing field. And that forever learning concept was brought up regularly in the first 56 episodes of Talking Cybersecurity. We also touched on the role of a head of security versus a chief information security officer and the benefits of having an executive sponsor. Episode 10 was entitled, How Good Is This Software? In this episode, we discussed the recent data breaches experienced by Uber and the importance of third-party assessments. We discussed the software called Security Software that provides a comprehensive view of an organization's security posture and allows for easy identification of vulnerabilities. We explained how the software can be used to assess third parties, and we discussed the value it brought to a security team. Have a listen to episode 10 to hear about the software, which is an alternative approach to third-party assessments, and how it could benefit your organization. Well, friends, that is it for the summary of the first 10 episodes. I hope it helped you in some way, and I will do others in the future. Could even be next week. Who knows? I hope you're getting back into the swing of things at work. You don't have to be Nostradamus to predict there will be more data breaches this year. And of course, they will be reported as a sophisticated attack. But as most of us know, it'll be due to some failure of basic hygiene factors. For what it's worth, make sure you complement your strong passwords, and I do mean strong, i.e. at least 12 characters with upper, lower numerics and special characters. Complement them with MFA. That's just the very, very basics of protection. Perform your user revalidations regularly. Make sure your publicly facing servers are regularly patched. Don't just rely on, oh, we're up to date, nothing to see here. Ask to see the evidence and report on that every month. And while I'm at it, ensure you continually educate your staff how to detect phishing emails. Remember, they are the easiest, cheapest, and fastest way into your network. All these things cost money, of course. You know, you could throw in, make sure you've got a decent email security product and make sure you've got a decent endpoint detection response capability, but they do cost money. But imagine how much a data breach will set you back. If this is frightening you, sounds like it's time to get your pen and paper out and justify a few items to your boss or your board. Tell them what you want, how much it'll cost, and most importantly, express your need in terms of risk. What risk will this shiny new toy mitigate? What is the potential cost if this risk eventuates and you don't have that fancy new toy? I'm sure you can work that out. Okay, folks, until next time, this is Richard about to sign off. 2024. I wonder what this year's going to be remembered as. We'll certainly know in 50-odd weeks. Let's hope it's not the year of the data breach. I'm betting on the year of change. I've spoken to a number of people in the first few weeks of this year, and a number are talking about moving jobs, moving houses, Moving, moving, moving. If you do make a move, make sure it's the right move. Just go through all the pros and cons and make sure that money isn't the primary factor for moving. Just make the right decision, I guess. And with those words, it really is time to move on. Au revoir. See you next week. Bye.